This is a CHUO 89.1 FM podcast.
Welcome to AI and Higher Learning, the podcast that asks University of Ottawa professors what AI means for students and how they can approach it wisely. I'm your host and digital literacy librarian, Mish Boutte. For today's episode, I'll be interviewing Professor Phyllis Rippey. Phyllis L.F. Rippey is a full professor of sociology at the University of Ottawa. Last year, she was director of the Institute of Feminist and Gender Studies. Previously, she was an assistant professor of sociology at Acadia University and coordinated the program in women's and gender studies in her last 3 years there. Professor Rippey's research explores issues of inequality, especially gender inequality, related to infant feeding. She wrote a book, Breastfeeding and the Pursuit of Happiness, published in 2021 by McGill-Queen's University Press, and she's published her research in the American Sociological Review, among others. Her research has caught the interest of Bloomberg, Le Droit, Chicago Tribune, Slate.com, GoodMorningAmerica.com, Fortune.com, Live Science, MSNBC, The Globe and Mail, and Huffington Post. Her work on the economic costs of breastfeeding was featured on the BBC World Service program The Food Chain and the NPR show The Takeaway. Phyllis, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today on AI and Higher Learning.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So before we start talking about AI, I wonder if you can maybe tell us a bit about yourself. Like, in addition to the biography I just read to introduce you, is there anything listeners should know about you, either professionally or personally?
Sure. I mean, there's so much to know about me, but I think what's relevant probably is, well, for one thing, I teach a lot of research methods courses. And so a few years ago, I started to create this website called doingsocialresearch.com. And I just recently started a podcast of the same name. So I'm very much a fan of podcasts in general and was very delighted to be invited here. But it also, I think because of that, and also my spouse is a web developer and has a website also. He helped me with this. But it's also gotten me sort of digging deep into AI, not just in terms of the sort of sociological implications, but I'm also just using it a lot and thinking about it a lot and talking about it a lot, just with other colleagues, because I think it really is, there's one, someone I once knew who used to say, it's a sticky wicket. It's a real sticky wicket. And I think also, I was curious to hear who else you're going to have on this show, because I think that there is a real importance of, you know, that scientists, you know, data scientists have important perspectives on the and thinking about it in lots of ways, but I really think it's important that as sociologists, as social scientists, those in the humanities, philosophers, that sort of everybody really start thinking about this, because I think it has implications for, you know, students, but also just for social life, for understanding, like, what are we doing here?
For sure. The more sort of interdisciplinary look we can take at this,
yeah,
I think the better off we all are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you consider yourself a technophile? You big into technology generally?
I wouldn't say that, like, that's a part of my identity, but but I definitely, I think I use a lot of technology, and I'm pretty, like, I'm not an early adopter of, like, in that sort of sense, but I do use a lot of technology, and I'm grateful for the technology that I have, and I think that I'm not afraid of it. Maybe I'll put it that way. Yeah.
All right. So talking about using and thinking about and talking about AI. So what's been your personal experience with generative AI or other AI tools since in the last 2 years, since the public release of ChatGPT?
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe I'll start with sort of my first encounter with it was a couple of years ago as a professor in a course. And like, I'd heard about it and it was sort of just on the horizon, but I didn't even know where you would find it. Like, it was just like ChatGPT had, anyway. So this was a few years ago. And I was teaching a course on the sociology of the United States. And I had this assignment that where I was drawing on this former ASA, American Sociological Association president's Eric Olin Wright, he had this idea of real utopias in his presidential address. And he sort of talked about, you know, we need to start thinking not just about critically analyzing society, but we need to imagine other futures. And so I had this little assignment that I called like U.S. topias, where the class had to develop their own little U.S. topias. But I made this term up. And so they had to do this. And then like we as a class came up with a quote unquote U.S. topia. And then their final assignment in lieu of a final exam was to write a paper critiquing and sort of tearing apart the U.S. topia that we came up with, because it was always kind of problematic. And basically it just looked like Canada. So, but I had this one student who wrote a paper, and their U.S. topia began with something like, U.S. topias are an important part of the founding fathers' vision of the United States. And I was like, what is this? Like, I made up this weird, why would the student do this? And it was, AI was so new that I started to like question, like, is this the student? Is it? They also were an international student. So it's like, did they just use translation software? Now I can see there, I have no question that was AI, like that they just copied and pasted it. And it made nonsense. Like we know this about AI now, that it will just create nonsense words. And so I think I gave him, it was the lowest grade I think I've ever given on a paper because I couldn't be sure. I think he got like a 12% on it. But anyway, so that to me was my first encounter with it. Like, and then since then, you know, I would say more recently, even just in the last 6 months that I have been doing more sort of, I think also because stuff that my husband has used, AI stuff for web development, that I've started to use it myself for working on my website. And even just like, you know, looking at Instagram reels of people who are talking about ways to use AI. So I've been using it in particular ways, but I also, anyway, we'll keep talking about it. But that's sort of the long answer to your question.
All right. How about in research? Have you tried any research oriented or teaching yeah. learning oriented tools?
Yeah. So a couple, it was, I don't know, a little bit after that, maybe like a year ago, year and a half ago, I think I wanted to just see, I was curious. Well, first thing I think I did was I put my own name in. And that was kind of fun to see, like, give me a bio of Phyllis Rippey. And it was this like weird concoction of, so my mom has the same or had the same name. And some other professor also did research on breastfeeding. It was like this weird conglomeration of, so that was sort of my first sense that this is spewing out garbage. Like this is not, like some of it was true, like there was some truth to it. And then another thing that I did that I actually found really useful was like I've never used it to write my research papers, but I've put in like, here are all my resources, or maybe what I think I said, like, give me a list of the key authors who do work on like the sociology of breastfeeding, the politics of breastfeeding. And what was helpful about that was it allowed me to sort of see, oh, I hadn't seen this article before. I hadn't seen that article before. So to me, I found that to be a really useful tool, and something that I would encourage students to do is, you know, I mean, if it becomes, all of these things can be helpful or they can be really problematic depending on what the learning outcome is, like in the classroom. So if my learning outcome is that I want students to show that they can use the library, I really do not want them just going onto ChatGPT. Like I want them to understand like what is Omni or what is whatever the reference service is. I want them to understand, you know, how it is that what a book is. Like I have a colleague in another unit who's been so frustrated because she's realized that her students who are graduate students, they can't identify the difference between like a book or a book chapter and a journal article, like some really kind of basic things. And like she called me on the phone, like I don't talk to her on the phone ever. She was like, I have to talk to you about this, like this. And you know, so I think that there are, you know, there are important learning outcomes that we have to be thinking about. What are we trying to get our students to do? And using AI, generative AI like this as a way, as a workaround to avoid learning it, that's really problematic. But if, like, I know how to find articles, like I don't need to personally be tested on how do I find an article. But so if I want to use this tool that tells me, here are all these, a list of key articles, there could be, it could be bullshit, but then I'll go find the article and then I'll look at it and say, oh yeah, that is relevant, or is it, like, I can make my, up my own mind.
Right.
But to me, that's a really useful tool to just help me see, like, are there any, like, spaces, anything that I'm missing that I didn't realize I'm missing.
Just a second take, and it's available to you when you need it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. So you talked a bit about one of your courses. What courses do you teach at U Ottawa?
Yeah. So this year I am on sabbatical, so I'm not teaching anything. But I normally teach a lot of research methods, research methodology courses. Mm-hmm. It's kind of different every term. I usually teach a grad statistics course, and I usually teach an undergrad statistics course at least one. Next year, I'm only going to do the grad. I also teach courses in, next year I'll be teaching more courses on sort of gender kinds of issues, also qualitative methods, sometimes survey design, but those are the kinds of courses I generally teach.
Do you ever teach courses in French?
Only once, and we are all glad that it was only once. I could. I just, I'm not, I can't think of my feet in the way.
I ask because I'm interested in knowing what are the unique challenges in terms of AI in other languages or multiple languages, for example.
I would be really interested to know that. I mean, one thing that's a slightly different thing that I learned, I went to a workshop the other day that was put on by the Faculty of Social Sciences, I think, about sort of uses in the classroom. Sort of the idea was to be not to debate it, but to just think about what are some tips, which I thought, oh, that'll be good for today also, that I could bring some in. And one of the things that I learned, that I don't know if students, I want them to know this, but apparently one of the people who attended, her son just got a 0 on a paper because he had used ChatGPT to translate his paper from whatever, like he wrote the paper, but other students had gotten ChatGPT to write a paper and then they used DeepL like to translate it. And then that was not detected on the detection software.
Right.
Which is craziness to me. But it also, like, one thing that I think, I keep thinking about these sort of moral dilemmas and ethical dilemmas about it. And like, I just keep asking myself, is this something that I would Google? And then if I were to Google it, would I cite it? Or is this just kind of information that I would take in? Mm. So, like, to me, if it's information that's like, okay, I, like, maybe a question I might ask for my website would be, what do people who are wanting to know more about social research methods, what would be, like, what are the top 10 most searched terms or something, right? Yes. So it could be wrong, it could be right, but at least it gives me an idea of things that maybe I should write a page about that. And so that could be helpful. Like, I wouldn't Google, like, to take a whole paper or something, to me is the same as putting into Google, where can I buy a paper? You know, like, where can I find this exact paper? So I think with language stuff as well, like, I don't know in terms of the content being better or worse depending on the language that it's in, but I think that especially at U Ottawa, a lot of us use translation software like DeepL or other things. And there was a time when I first started using it, I was like, oh my God, I'm cheating. Like, I should be using it more, like, I should just be doing this in French. I should just be talking in French. And there is, again, it goes back to, like, what is my learning outcome? When I first got here, it was important that I really immersed myself in French, and I took a lot of courses that are offered here. And, you know, our department meetings in the sociology department are run entirely in French. Like, I took advantage of those things because I really needed to learn the language. And now I feel comfortable, you know, I passed my test to get tenure and I taught a doctoral seminar in French. Like, I have supervised students in French. I've been on editorial boards of journals in Quebec that are French, you know, like I can function in French. So I feel less like, you know, my learning outcome is I just need to send this email really quickly to someone. So it's like, I'm going to use DeepL. And to me, that is a form of, like, you know, I don't know technically, like, that's another guess we'll have to answer about sort of the nuanced differences between, you know, the algorithms behind DeepL and, you know, Google Translate versus ChatGPT and all these other things. But I know that there's, like, increasingly AI in the background of a lot of these tools, and that I think a lot of us don't really question anymore because we just are like, you know, everyone, it's like profs that we now share with each other, like, oh yeah, you don't know about DeepL. Like, that's, you got to use that software. It's better than Google Translate. That's, like, not up for debate. And so, like, to me, it's the newness that I think sort of freaks people out, but also gives us cause to pause, and we do need to think about it. But anyway, I'm just going on and on.
No, it's great. I'm heartened to hear what you say about learning outcomes. That's one of the key messages I try to convey when it comes to AI. Is AI helping students meet the learning objective, or is AI simply helping students bypass the learning objective?
Yes. Sorry, I just yelled. Exactly. Exactly. It is. I mean, it's like I think about it because I teach so much statistics. We use, in my course, well, in the undergrad courses, I always teach them how to use SPSS, and in the grad, I teach them Stata, which is just another statistical software. And anybody can use these softwares, and they will get gobbledygook. Like, you can get results. And, like, I often have students come into the courses, especially the, like, undergrad course. Students say, oh, you know, I'm excited to take this course, but I'm really afraid of math. And I'm like, girl, the problem is not the math. Like, the math is addition, subtraction. Occasionally, like, we'll use some fractions, but the math is easy. The hard part is the analysis. The hard part is the interpretation. The hard part is, like, we're going to get the computer to create, like, to do the output. Like, they're going to do all that math, but you're the one who has to understand what was behind it. And that's why when I'm teaching that course, like, I'm getting my students to understand the formulas and to do the math, and they have to do it with a hand calculator. I know I have my daughter used to be in engineering, and there they couldn't use calculators on their exams because, I don't know why, they also made the equations so you could sort of do mental math a little bit more easily. But so for mine, I'm like, I want them to understand the math. I want them to understand the formulas so that they understand what it is that that computer is doing. But like, as a researcher, I'm not going to hand calculate like a multiple regression equation, like with, you know, with like 50 variables. That would be such a waste of my time.
Right.
So to me, a lot of this generative AI is, you know, it's a tool. It's like a ruler or a calculator or SPSS where, you know, it'll produce things that could be total garbage. Like, if you don't code your variables correctly before you put them into SPSS or Stata, what you're going to get is going to make absolutely no sense, but it'll give you numbers. And often my students will submit papers where I'm like, this, what, like, what are you talking about? And they don't even know. And so, you know, that's my job, is to help them understand how to do that. And to me, that is what it is now our job as professors with AI as this new tool that students can use, is to help them understand, okay, well, some of what might come out might make no sense. Some of it might be, you know, I think it is a terrible tool if, like, for getting the truth, quote unquote, truth about anything. You know, like, you can get some stuff if it's really widely known, if it's really generic, like anything really generic, I think it's really good for it. It's like, you want to know, like, what's the formula for a triangle? It'll tell you that. But if you want to know some, like, really niche, if you want to know who Phyllis Rippey is, who is not, doesn't have that big of a, like, internet footprint, like, you're going to get half nonsense with, like, a little element of truth. And if you don't know anything about Phyllis Rippey, you might just take that as truth. And so to me, that's our job as professors and librarians, is to help students understand how do we use these tools in a way, again, that supports learning and doesn't bypass it. Because if you all you do is bypass it, you're going to end up looking like an idiot when you have a job one day, or you're someplace else where you're like, oh, yeah, I know how to write a paper, and you don't actually know how to write a paper. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I think it is a challenge that is posed to us that has important ethical implications, but I also, like, I'm just not one who thinks, like, let's throw the baby out with the bathwater or whatever.
Right, right. Well, that's what we're talking about here, yeah. rather than just throw it all out and throw our hands up in the air.
Yeah.
So in addition to answering questions about Utopias, yeah, have you noticed any other ways that AI has impacted classes that you teach in the past couple of years?
I mean, it definitely, and it's also because last year, it's so funny, this is all so new. Like, I'm not teaching this year, and last year I only taught one course in the fall. And I feel like even just from the, like, end of fall term 2023 to now, it's like 100 years of, like, growth in terms of AI. One thing I definitely know from hearing from colleagues or students that I'm supervising is, like, and I know that I am doing this a bit more too, is a lot more in-class exams, a lot more in-class assignments, a lot more oral exams. Like, I think the nature of learning is, or I shouldn't say learning, the nature of assessment, like assessing learning, really is changing. And one thing I think is also kind of funny or interesting, I have this kind of, I'll just say it's like a hypothesis, but a few years ago, I remember being really, it was the first class where after COVID, where I had an in-person sit-down exam. And I think I made it a little bit too long per the comments afterwards, but we were all sort of figuring it out. But partly they had to handwrite it. And one thing that I realized is that a lot of the students didn't know how to write cursive and they didn't know how to read in cursive. And so I was mentioning this to my friend. I was like, this is an outrage. How is it that people I took so much pride in like making my handwriting be something that is like my own unique handwriting. And I mentioned it to a colleague and she's like, there's an app for that. They don't need to know cursive. And I think that there was this sort of like move towards that, but people have started to, you know, like there's been conversations I've seen in the news or whatever about cursive and what's that, the social role of cursive. But my hypothesis is I actually think cursive is going to make a comeback because I think more and more people are having to do exams online, or sorry, not online, in person, or having, you know, like sometimes people will have students write in class. And there was one professor who was having their students write on their laptops. And then another student joking was like, well, you know, some of the students in class are using ChatGPT. And he was like, oh my God, what? Like, are you serious? And yeah, like it is. Now, sometimes, again, some of the uses are totally appropriate. Some of them, it's like not always a problem if people are using ChatGPT, but it's hard to know. And if what you want to assess is like knowledge of something, it's probably these days better to get students to be doing that like in person with a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil. Whereas if you want to get, well, can students develop a research question? Can they, you know, think about and extrapolate like from evidence that is presented to them? You know, those kinds of things, maybe ChatGPT would be a tool to help them, but it's not really gonna, it's not necessarily like, I think they have to, they can't do that just sitting in the classroom. Like there are times where you have to let them go out into the wild and write a paper on their own computers. You know?
Yeah, definitely. So you haven't had a chance to teach a course where you've had to make changes in the light of AI.
Well, I think that like, I'm just trying to remember, but I'm pretty sure that, that the last course that I taught, I did three in-class exams instead of two, as a way of, trying to increase sort of making sure that there are more of the learning outcomes were going to be assessed in exams rather than in written work. It was a introductory statistics course. So it was, the papers were more about showing how to use SPSS. So it didn't really seem like they had to show me all their syntax that they did. So it didn't seem to me that like what I was trying to assess was, can they use SPSS? And the writing, I already give them a really sort of like, here's what you need for the introduction, like a really clear outline of like, fill in these blanks and then just show me that you can interpret data. So like they could have used ChatGPT, but it felt like it would be a waste of their time, you know? Right. Or if they get ChatGPT to get it, you know, if they, maybe they did it themselves and then that gave them the quote unquote correct answer. Like, I don't even know if ChatGPT would be able to give the kind of answer that I would be looking for. Like it would take you a long time, I think, to get that prompt just right. You might as well just write it yourself.
In order to get the proper prompt engineering. Yeah. And since any prompt will get different answers every time you ask.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the challenge.
Yeah, and I think, it's also why I try to do something, like even with the Ustopia thing, trying to make like whatever the assignment is, very particular to the class. So like I had a survey design course that where we collected our own data. And so one of the assignments in the next class was they use that data that we collected. And we were the only people who, like I was the only person who had the data. So it made it, you couldn't like go out there and find, you know, someone who'd already analyzed that variable and then steal the work or something.
Right. Yeah. It's not already posted on a assignment website.
Exactly. Yeah.
So talked a little bit about writing. So where is academic integrity now? Is it really the end of the essay, do you think?
No. I think it is. I don't know. I'm not like I hear the critiques and I hear the potential problems. And I think it's important that especially we as social scientists, you know, again, people in the humanities, that we be asking these questions and we think about it. I know there was just an article in the Globe and Mail just the other day about, you know, this is like the end of writing because, and it said something like 90% of things on the internet were written by AI at this point.
Wow.
And it sounds like really dramatic, but I can also tell you as having worked very closely with my husband on his website, we did a lot, like when a number of years ago when I was on mat leave, I sort of took some of that time and I was like playing around with learning about like SEO, so search engine optimization, and sort of trying to help, you know, grow his website and get more traffic. And one thing that became really clear is like nobody looks like past the maybe the first or second page of any Google search, right? It's like, and there are like hundreds of pages of material. Nobody is going to look beyond that. And that's why, like, our goal, like, in that situation, our goal was, it's like, we want his site on the page one for whatever the search was, right?
Right.
So, which we now have for some things. Anyway, but, you know, so to me, there's something about the fact that 90% of the internet is written by AI. 90% of the internet, probably nobody ever looks at. Like, you know, maybe 85%. There is so much on the internet that nobody ever pays attention to. And to me, I also was listening to, I wish I could remember the name of it, but this really good podcast I just listened to that was, it was about this guy, he's a journalist. It was like one of the like hot podcasts of the year or something that everybody's listening to. And it was about this journalist who decided to clone his voice using AI. Have you heard this? Do you know what I'm talking about?
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't yet place it.
Yeah. So he decided to clone his voice and then use generative AI to provide the words for his cloned voice and to sort of see what happened. And it is so fascinating. And it's like funny. So, you know, like one episode is him, like he just made this answer his phone. So it was like telemarketers who would call and then would talk to his like ChatGPT bot voice. And, you know, and then eventually like it ended talking about like his family or friends, and one thought didn't catch that it was an AI bot and thought he was kind of losing his mind because it was just so weird and stilted. And one of the things, like there's a part of it that is, this is scary. You know, this is so dystopian. This is so like disturbing. But then there also was a part of it that was like, well, a lot of the telemarketers were also bots. And so suddenly we're entering this world where it's like the caller is a bot and then the receiver is a bot. And then it was like they just will talk to each other and then our phone is silent and we can just do our other work. And to me, it's kind of, you know, or else I'll be looking for reels, let's say on Instagram, and I'll see people talking about like, oh, here's how you can become rich with whatever. And it's like, oh my God, these all say the same thing. And then I'm just like, scroll, like, yeah, I already got that. I already got that. And it's, so to me, there's almost an element where it's like a math equation where it's like two fractions where it's, you know, it's like the numerator and the denominators cancel out. And then all that's left is actually interesting things. And to me, this is why I see a lot of promise with AI and why it's actually, why our jobs are not at risk and why writing isn't at risk is because once everybody has access to AI, everybody can write crap, like, because you're not writing it, it's the AI. But what AI cannot do, like, it is only iterative, like, it only mimics, it only can copy the ideas that are already there. What we are learning in universities, like in the social sciences, in humanities, what we are learning is how to generate new ideas, things we have never thought of before. And AI can't do that. Like, yes, it can tell me what else has been written on this topic, but I'm the one who has to be looking through that and combing through it and figuring out, like, how might I think about this differently? How might I question this? I'm the one who has to ask, why is it this way? Like, a lot of my research questions come from asking, well, why is that that? And then asking, yeah, well, why is that that? And why is that that? And, you know, I suppose I could use AI, but there's going to be a point at which I ask so many times that it's going to run out of answers, or it's just going to be total, you know, what do they call it? Hallucinations,
right.
Like where it's just, they're just making it up, because AI will always give you an answer, even if it's just total garbage. So to me, I'm not worried about the end. I'm actually, what I'm excited about is that it actually, for a lot of writing, a lot of student writing, it already isn't that novel, like at the beginning, because none of ours is. Like, that's just not, we have to train and learn how to do it. We need to learn what that means to do that. And so to me, there is some kind of potential or promise of like, it's like, let the AI do the boring, like, calculations. But the analysis, the thinking, that comes from having, like, read books in, you know, literature and having, like, traveled around the world, having conversations with our peers. Like, that's where we sort of bring together things that wouldn't have even occurred to us to, like, create this new thought. And so I'm not worried about it. I think it actually has a potential to be a kind of equalizer of access to the basic information. Mm. And then it opens up space for those of us who want to really be thinking about it to be able to offer something that nobody can get anyplace else. But I'm often accused of being a Pollyanna. So maybe I'm just, you know, naively optimistic.
But you're putting a lot of thought into this. So speaking about putting thought into the use of AI, so what advice would you have generally for students who wish to use it wisely?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said earlier of, is this supporting your learning outcome? Are you bypassing your learning outcome? And like, that is the fundamental question. And I think so often, like, I appreciate, you know, I have kids who are in university or have been in university. Like, I understand that, like, life is hard and people have jobs and mental health struggles and just, you know, friends and life. And there's all kinds of things. And that sometimes we can get overwhelmed with our assignments and, like, we can, you know, want to say, okay, I'm just going to let ChatGPT do it for me or something. But I think it is really important that people pause, take a minute to, like, what do I want to get out of this? Like, do I really want to rush my way through school, taking 6 classes, running all my assignments through ChatGPT so that I can get a job? But then as soon as I get a job, I'm fired because I can't do what I thought I could do. It is part of what we are doing in university is we are training people for a labor market. But we also are teaching people how to think, and thinking takes time, and it's slow. And, you know, I had on my podcast, I just released an episode with a dear old friend of mine, Mike Allen, who's a professor of comparative literature at the University of Oregon. And we got into a conversation talking about sort of efficiencies and our kind of frustration with university administration, sort of this pressure to, like, have more students and to, like, you know, push our students through. And he said, you know what's really inefficient? A classroom. And he was saying that, you know, all of these things that we can complain about, like students are mad or they're saying we're too conservative or we're too liberal or we're too whatever. And, you know, people can get upset or people, whatever. He's like, that is where we are human. He's like, AI can never express emotion. It can never, like, it'll never get triggered, he said, which I was like, oh my God. But it's like, sometimes when we're triggered, that is like the spark of a research question where it's like, I am so mad. I can't believe someone said that. That will, like, drive us to ask and to try to answer this question or to prove someone wrong. It's like my favorite kind of research is like rage resentment research where it's like, that person said I couldn't do it. I'm going to show them that they're wrong. But you know, you're never going to get that. Like, AI doesn't care. AI is always kind of like a little enthusiastic and friendly. Like, it's just isn't the same thing. And so I think I would say to students, like, you are missing out on, like, what it is to exist as a human being. If you are thinking that all of your assignments are going to be about, you know, ChatGPT, if all you care about is the grade, if all you care about is, like, getting it done, like, you're losing out. And so I think that's sort of just a framework to start with. So, like, in terms of more practical advice, I mean, I definitely think, like, Grammarly, please God, for the love of God, use whatever, like, artificial intelligence editing software for your papers. Like, it is so tiring to, like, you know, grading papers can be really exhausting when it's, like, hard to understand what it is that was written there. So I'm a very, you know, but also use your friends. Read it aloud to yourself. Get other people to edit it. You know, but if you want to run something, you know, you write your whole paper and then you run some kind of grammar check through AI, I don't think that that's a problem, even though it probably would show up. Like, these AI detection softwares are, I think, kind of garbage, but from my understanding, but I think that that could show up that way. But, you know, also, like, asking yourself questions. A couple things I thought was really interesting at this workshop I went to, I wish I could remember to give credit to the guy who was doing the talk. He's in the psychology department, I remember that. But one of the things he was suggesting that I had never even thought of is that you can get ChatGPT to challenge yourself in a sort of, like, Socratic kind of method. So you could put into it, like, and this was a suggestion as an assignment that a professor could assign, but I think students doing it themselves, it's like you could put in there, okay, I'm making this argument, give me 10 reasons why I'm wrong. And then you could use those 10 reasons why I'm wrong. And you could, you know, it's always in good writing, you always should be responding to your critics. And maybe 7 of those examples are like, no, that's just gobbledygook. But maybe 3 of them would sort of inspire you to think, oh, that is a good argument. What is my counter argument? Like, I want to refine my thinking as a way of, you know, I'm going to use ChatGPT or, you know, whatever the generative software is to try to challenge myself rather than, like, to make myself go further. I keep making a joke with friends of mine saying, you know, ChatGPT is not really that different than what 17th century philosophers had. It's just instead of, like, technology, they had a bored, highly educated housewife who they could steal the credit for. So, you know, it's like we all talk with others. And I think the problem that people are concerned about is that there's nothing to cite. There's no, like, you can't put, you know, if you were to have, if you're writing a research paper, you can cite, well, you know, I used this book. Or you could even say, like, you know, personal conversation via email in, like, a footnote or something. Like, I think people are so sheepish about using AI, people aren't wanting to say, well, actually, I ran this through AI. But we also wouldn't say, well, I Googled, you know, I use Google Scholar for all of my searches, or if I'm not using the library website. And so I think there still needs to be, you know, we pull in ideas from all over the place. And so to me, there isn't a problem with doing that. It's just, you want to be thinking, like, is my use of this technology, exactly as you said, is it helping me learn more? Am I growing more? Am I coming up with something? Will I feel proud, like I own this? Like, does this feel like this is mine? Or does this feel like I'm cheating? Like, I think people at a gut level, like, I also tell students a lot, just as, like, in a classroom, what's we don't have in, you know, in a computer is emotions. Like, to me, emotions are an epistemological tool that they tell us, is this right? Is this wrong? And I think asking, you know, checking with your gut, does this feel like I'm doing something wrong? And also always, always, always check in with your professors. Like, it's going to depend. Like, I know some people are like, no AI, nothing. I want it all with a quill and a parchment paper. Like, you know, people have different attitudes and I respect that. And I think challenging students to have to respond differently to different professors is, you know, that there's a benefit in that. But, you know, whenever you're not sure, like my son is a sociology major here and he'll be like, how do I do this paper? Should I do like, is this going to be okay? And I'm like, what was the assignment? What did your, like, go talk to your professor. Why are you talking to me? I don't know. Like, I'm a sociologist, but it doesn't mean I know everything. So, you know, it's, you know, there are going to be nuanced differences between professors. And if you're not sure, talk to the professor. And if you're not sure if your professor will think that you've done something wrong, then maybe think about what you're doing. Like, if you don't want your professor to know, that probably is a good sense that it's probably a problem.
Right. As a librarian, I get students asking me a lot of questions to help with them with research. And the answer to their questions a lot of the time is check with your professor.
Right. Or read the assignment. Oh my God. I swear to God. I think, like, if a student just follows the instructions on my assignments, it would probably be like an 80, like just right there. Like, just follow the instructions, like, so often, because I also give very clear rubrics when I'm teaching and I give it to them before they write the paper. And I'm always shocked. I'm like, you left off, like it said right there, 15% of this was just to do this. Why didn't you do that? It's like, oh, I didn't look at that. Yeah.
If only students could have such benefit from all professors. Sometimes assignments are more detailed in other cases.
Yes.
And also checking with professors definitely is helpful. There seems to be kind of a continuum from everything from just acting as though AI doesn't even exist and pretending that it doesn't, to outright ban or just open season, use it, it's fine. And then to sort of a more nuanced approach, like for this assignment, these are reasons why it could be used this way, and these are reasons why it shouldn't be used in these ways.
Yeah.
Again, probably coming back to those objectives.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, I really respect my colleagues who think AI is the Antichrist, and I really respect colleagues who think this is like, there's no problems with it at all. Like, and I do, like my son is very anti-AI. He's like, this is problematic. It's killing the environment. He was like totally yelling at me a week ago. That might have been other reasons too, but he was like all upset. And he was like, don't you understand? There's so much more of a tax on like energy grids than Google or anything else. And my answer is, you know, well, actually in that podcast, in the final episode, spoiler alert, but he was talking about some letter to the editor or like an op-ed or something in the New York Times that was written in like 1924, because it was exactly 100 years ago, and that it was, and he always loved it, but it, because the guy doing the podcast is like a tech journalist, and that it was a guy who was the last shop owner in New York that didn't have a telephone. And he was like explaining what the problem, like if everybody gets a telephone, it's going to be so noisy and these things are going to be ringing. And it's like, you know, it's crazy that that was 100 years ago. Like only 100 years ago, there you could have a store without a telephone. Like now stores don't have telephones, but it's because they have cell phones. It's like because like we've moved beyond the telephone. So to me, it's like there are always, like there are social implications of any new technology, any new device. And I think it is the job of philosophers, of theorists, of social scientists to be pausing and saying, wait a second, like we can't let like Elon Musk drive the bus, like I refuse. And we can't let like, you know, Silicon Valley or tech bros be the ones to just say, because we know as sociologists, like there's tons of research showing, you know, there's racism embedded in algorithms, there's all kinds of social assumptions that are really problematic that we have to be thinking about. And there is all kinds of ideas that can be repeated through. Like that was actually what someone pointed out really interesting at that workshop. You know, the example that was given, another professor was like, well, that's funny because you're using that as a good example, but actually that's nonsense and research has shown that that is not true. At the same time, the professor critiquing it was angry, like in not like, you know, he wasn't being problematic. Like it was a legitimate frustration with like, how are students supposed to know that that is just made up? And to me, it's like, you could also Google, like you could talk to your mom, you could talk to your brother. Like we get bullshit information. Like the world is full of so much bullshit. And so like my attitude is the more that I use AI, the more I understand its limits. Like I understand what it can't do. I understand like, you know, I've used it for like helping me to write reference letters for students, which is something I take way too much time. I agonize over, I like overthink a ton. And what I realized is that AI is so good for writing kind of generic letters for students that I don't really know that well and I don't have a lot to say about. But for students that I know really well, it's terrible because the letters that come out are kind of generic letters that you would expect from someone that you don't really know because they don't know you. So like, again, I think that the kinds of ways in which we need to be thinking about it, like we need to be critical about it. We need to challenge the ways in which there are biases embedded in these algorithms, but it's because there are biases embedded in social life. And that's what it's picking up on. But it also is like, well, that's also true of, you know, our phones, it's true of Google, it's true, you know, like this is why, again, why I don't think academics, I'm not worried about losing our jobs. I think actually that, you know, some of the boring parts of our job maybe could be taken over by this. So then we can actually have more time to be thinking about these really interesting questions.
Yeah, when you were talking about creating new knowledge and thinking of new ideas, it made me think of like the data set that an AI would have, and it can't think outside its own data set. And what researchers are doing are going beyond the frontiers of those data sets, finding the knowledge that isn't represented yet.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like maybe it can... You know, I mean, I'm maybe for like business or, you know, if you have like a product and you're trying to, I mean, the kinds of uses I've used it for that have been most helpful to me are things like, what are the kinds of questions people are asking online? Like sort of developing ideas that might be useful for my quote unquote business, if you want to call my website that. But like for the really, I think you'd asked me before and I sort of got derailed as I usually do. But one thing also I did in research once was I asked my one of my research questions, which is there's this paper sort of, it's like an idea I've had that I've kind of been puzzling through where I don't really have a lot of good evidence for it. So it sort of like sits on the back burner. It's like something I just keep thinking about and like how am I, so like maybe I'll just put it into ChatGPT. And it came up with like a very confident answer. Like, here's it. And it was like, again, it was half of it was nonsense. But there were a few little pearls that came out that I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll explore that a little bit more. But it's either going to repeat things that are true or it's just going to make up shit. Like, it's just, and that I think is like what we are able to do as human beings is like, we're always kind of making stuff up, but we're being trained, you know, through like what we're learning in universities is how can we identify this kinds of information? And I think also it like speaks to the relevance and the social value of higher education. Like sometimes, you know, people think about it, oh, it's just for a job. I need it for this job training. And it's like, I think AI shows why that's not true. Like, because AI is going to be able to do all the like job stuff. It's like our bread and butter, like the one thing we do that is like nowhere else is that we get to ask obscure questions that everybody thinks is irrelevant or weird or why would anybody care about that? And someday one of these ideas, like for all of these professors, like, why are you looking at that? Why are you looking at that? And there will be a moment where it's like, oh my God, thank God that person looked at that. Like, and that is like, AI, it's just not, like, there still needs to be a person putting in a prompt into AI. Like, AI isn't just going to, like, come up to us and be like, hey, I thought of this really cool research question. Like, it's just, that's not, you know, I don't know, maybe in the long distant future, but it just doesn't even make logical sense. But I don't know. I remember being in university and a friend went to Japan for a summer and came back and showed us, and she was trying to describe to us a digital camera. And this was like, because this was in 1997, something like that. I could not comprehend. I'm like, she's like, yeah, you see the picture. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, like a Polaroid? Like it sticks on the back? She's like, no, you see. I could not understand it. As like, so I don't know. Maybe I just don't understand something that's coming.
Trying to assume what's going to happen is pretty futile sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's why it's like, I don't get upset about it. I get curious about it. It's like so off. It's like the cursive example. Like, you know, I was all upset a couple of years ago. So I guess I do get upset. Anyway, I get upset about some things. But it was, you know, it's like, oh my God, cursive is going to disappear. And then the friend was like, well, there's an app. And I was like, oh yeah, who cares? But then suddenly it's like, oh wait, no, we do need to learn cursive because it's like quicker to like, it's, and we also want to know how to write in a way that like, I can, as a professor and I'm grading, I can read what it is that they write, right? So it's just, we just don't know. And I think it's, like, again, I don't want to put down or, like, discourage the critical thinking. Like, the people, like, the sort of, not the Luddites, but, like, you know, the people who are, you know, my son or whoever else who is, like, challenging. It's like, this is bad. Like, I think there's so much value in those critiques. But me personally, I'm more just kind of curious about it. And I'm kind of excited to see, like, could this be better? Could this be a horrible dystopian hellscape? You know, only time will tell.
We'll see. For sure. So how do you stay current on developments in AI? Do you?
God, I don't know if I am. I mean, I talk about it a lot with, like, colleagues. And then on my podcast, I'm loving asking just colleagues who, they're not doing research on AI, but just hearing about their feelings on it, how they're using it, you know. But it's true. And I think also talking to students, like, I think if professors want to know how are students using it, ask them, like, ask students, what are you using it for? Like, talk with them in class. Like, what are this, like, do the students feel it's problematic? Like, I had the one who used, I had one who changed my thinking. At first, I was like, no, don't use it. Don't use any, you know, ChatGPT. And she's like, well, she's the one who said, I run my papers to check for my grammar because I don't want to pay for Grammarly. Grammarly costs money and this is free. And I was like, well, that seems okay. I was like, what's the difference between that and spell check? You know? So I think, you know, to me, my pedagogical approach is always that I am learning from my students, you know, as much, or I don't know, as much, hopefully I have something to share with them, but it's like, I see it as very much a reciprocal relationship where I'm also learning from them as they're learning from me. So yeah. And there's also just, it's impossible. There's so much to know out there. Or if you want to know, you could always type into ChatGPT. What do I need to know to stay current on ChatGPT?
And give you some non-existent podcast to listen to.
Exactly.
Or hopefully before long, this one.
Exactly.
Right. Do you have a favorite movie, book, or piece of media that features AI?
Oh, I don't know. I love the Black Mirror.
The Netflix series,
because there's so many things on there where it's like, I don't know if it's like, I can't think of like a specific episode off the top of my head, but I love those, the questions that poses of like, what are we entering a dystopian hellscape future based on these technologies? Or like, it really grapples with these kinds of ethical questions about what happens if, you know, like there's one where it's like everybody gets like rated just like as human beings. And then it's like the guy ends up like homeless or like I think it, which is to me why I'm not just like Pollyanna, everything is great. Like, let's all do it. I think we have to look at these problematic things. But then, you know, to me, it really comes down to like, are we going to let the technology use us, or are we going to use the technology? And that's what I think we want to be moving towards.
For sure. So what are you most excited about the potential for AI?
honestly, lately, I have been like, holy moly, with writing reference letters. Also, like the potential for like great, there's just all the things that I super overthink. I have spent 4-6 hours writing reference letters. I did one the other day and it was like 20 minutes. And I didn't just I copied a bunch of it, I'll be honest, but I cut out, it's like super, it's a little over the top. It was like, this is the best student ever. And then I added in my own things. There was another time I tried to use it for a reference letter and it did not work at all. It was like, this is too, bleh. But the idea that, you know, or if there's something on the tip of my tongue about something, I can like put it in and be like, tell me about like, what is it that I'm missing? That, you know, sometimes I might use a human for that and just like talk about it. But so for me, I think just this idea that, or also there's like someone on Twitter posted making fun of themselves. Like, here's me opening up the like secret browser in Google to ask a question I don't want my browser to know I didn't know. You know, like, I think it's like space for all those stupid questions that I think is really exciting to like think about the ways like helping students learn how to use all of these tools at their disposal to like sort of move forward and learn more without, you know, the obvious problem of learning the wrong things. Right. But to me, that's the same as with the internet just as a whole.
Just an additional facet to it.
Yeah, yeah.
What concerns you most about AI?
I mean, definitely the classroom, like, ethics. Like, it's really troubling how someone, you know, if we're trying to do assessment of student work, that students can just, you know, they can bypass sort of the learning outcomes. And like, one of my least favorite, I'm not a cop. Like, I hate dealing with plagiarism, but I also really get, I almost take it personally when students plagiarize. I'm like, how dare you? I put in so much of this class and this is what you're giving me. Like, so that I think is really troubling. You know, I think there are questions about the environmental impact. Like, it takes a lot of power, like a lot of natural resources to create these softwares. And then when people are using them, I think, you know, the spread of misinformation, I that is something that troubles me, but it troubles me a little bit less because I think there's so much like, quote unquote, fake, I don't even like using that, you know, like false information that's spread already. And maybe this is making people more aware of that. So I'm sort of I don't know what the outcome is on that. And I do think, like, in terms of, like, I believe really profoundly in the capacity of human ingenuity and creativity and curiosity. And so I think long term, this will have labor market impacts that I think will get resolved. But in the short term, I think that it could have some, for you know, individual people, I think that there are some, you know, like my brother-in-law, he's in human resources. He's like a recruiter. And a few years ago, my son was arguing with him. He might argue a bit. But, and like, you know, oh, this is so terrible. Like, they shouldn't be using that because there's all this biases in recruitment. And Kevin was like, it doesn't matter, friend. They're using it. It's already there. And, you know, his company, like, he got laid off. And, you know, he now has a bunch of job interviews. And I'm sure he'll do fine. But, you know, these kinds of disruptions, when they happen, there are real impacts on people's lives. And, and I think that that is something that needs to be, there need to be safety nets to help people adapt to these kinds of social changes. And we can't just see this as purely good. There's always going to be some winners and some losers. And how do we help the losers not lose too much?
Definitely. I'm really enjoying our conversation. I could probably speak with you another hour on this, but we are reaching the end of our time here. No. So is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you think we should before we wrap up?
I think I covered everything I could possibly think about. I guess the one last thing I might say is that I think, you know, like I'm really interested in ethics, like the sort of theories around care ethics or ethics of care, depending how you put it. And one of the things that these theoretical perspectives suggest is that human beings are not independent sort of individuals, that we all exist in connection and in relation to others. And to me, I think that that is one of the things that makes me also feel not totally afraid of these sort of that dystopian future, because I think that humans need, like, we just have a need for human connection. And I think that that is just part of who we are. And so I really do, again, I have a kind of faith in what it is to be human. And, you know, Hannah Arendt, I talk about a lot, and I really love the philosopher, and I love her work. And she's really asking questions about, sort of like her work was right after Sputnik launched into outer space. And she's trying to ask, like, well, actually, I wrote it down. She said, what I propose, therefore, is very simple. It is nothing more than to think what we are doing. And I just love that so much. But part of her argument at the end of her, like, that you come to see is that we are constantly trying to escape what it is to be human. And that I think AI, you know, or going into outer space, any of these things are these ways that we think that we can escape it, and we just can't, and we never will. And I think that this really provides a moment to be asking ourselves, like, what is it that it is to be human? And to me, it's, you know, it's emotion, it's connection, it's care. Like, these are the things that are, like, these are our jam as human beings that AI really can't do. And so to me, this becomes really an opportunity for us to be thinking about how do we really embrace and honor our humanity and not sort of get so bogged down in the, like, is AI good or bad, that we sort of lose track of what we're doing just as being human. So, yeah, I think that.
Being human. I think I'm going to have you back for another episode if we keep going. I'm just really enjoying this talk. But Phyllis, I really appreciate you taking the time to have this discussion with us and to share your insights. If listeners want to know more about your work, your activity, or your thoughts, where would you direct them to go?
A few places, definitely. DoingSocialResearch.com is my sort of teaching tool website. I also have, which I haven't updated in forever. Well, I changed, when I got promoted to full professor, I changed that the other day. But PhyllisRippey.com. You can also just go to my university website. I'm on X. I hate calling it that. But there, and Instagram, @SocioMama is my handle. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. You can just Google me.
Or ask ChatGPT for directions.
Don't ask ChatGPT, because it will send you to, like, Alberta or something.
All right.
This has been such a pleasure, though. I love talking about ideas, and I love when people want to hear my ideas. So it's
excellent.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. This episode of AI and Higher Learning is hosted by Mish Boutte and produced and edited by me, Lauren Rolston, at CHUO 89.1 FM. Tune in next week for another episode wherever you get your podcasts. Mish will be joined by Andre Valino, a UOttawa professor and director of the School of Information Studies. You won't want to miss their conversation on the complexities of automated reasoning.